Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, sponsored by our friends at 1-800-DIALDJs.com and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media capital of the world and hometown of Blondie cartoonist Dean and Chick Young, Tampa Bay, Florida. In my mind, I've been associated with Playboy for roughly 40 years. I was roughly 10. Did I say roughly twice? I guess I did. I was roughly 10 when I discovered my dad's box of old magazines and a cardboard box on top of the stand-up cedar wardrobe in the attic. Now, discovered may not be the right word. At 10, I was finally mischievous enough to devise a way of getting up high enough to see what was in the box. Hello, Miss May, 1966. Anyway, cartoonist Gayon Wilson still has me beat. He's been connected with Hugh Hefner's monthly Treehouse for Boys for 50 years. He's joining us today to talk about his phenomenal longevity in production. Well, I'll be talking about that. He'll just respond to the questions about that, as well as work that resulted in the publication of the three-volume collection, Gayon Wilson, 50 Years of Playboy Cartoons, which is now available from Fantagraphics. Gayon, welcome to Mr. Media. Oops. Let's try it again. There you are.
Yes. That story you told about your father, that's the story. usually it's in the garage. I mean, almost always in the garage. And the greasiest place in the garage, so that it's the place where Mom wouldn't go.
You know, it's funny. I actually had to call my mom yesterday. My dad's been gone a while, but I called my mom, and I said, what do you call that thing up in the attic that used to keep clothes in, that kind of cedar thing? She says, the wardrobe? I said, yeah, that's the word. Thank you. She said, why did you want to know? I said, never mind. I still didn't want to tell her.
you got to shelter for stuff like that, yeah.
Well, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
You and I know, no one else knows. We were going to talk yesterday, and you had some car trouble.
Right, yeah.
And what's funny is, when we did connect later in the afternoon, I was on a school bus with about a dozen screaming teenage girls on the way to a soccer game that I was coaching, and I'm sitting with my assistant coach, who got a couple years on me, and when I got off the phone, I was explaining who I was talking to. He says, "Oh, I know his work," and he started describing several cartoons that he loved, you definitely everybody knows who you are.
Well, not everybody, but people do say nice things about it, I must say, and they do remember. They usually have little favorites, this one or that one, or the one that had the this and the that, and so on. I'm always very moved by that.
Well, then let me move you, because I wanted to tell you. I was going to wait, but let me tell you.
move ahead.
One of my favorites in this collection is a black and white illustration. Most of them in the book are color, but this happens to be black and white. Mm. It's on page 200, for those of you following at home, it's on page 256 of volume 1, and it's an old married couple, and the husband is looking at a wedding photo hanging on the wall, and he says, wait a minute, that's not me. I don't know, it just cracked me up.
Good. That's the whole point.
Well, and I got to ask, I mean, so many cartoons, so many years, do you have a favorite or a couple of favorites that, you know, really stand out for you, or is it difficult after so many?
It's difficult. There's no way I could pick a small list that would be worth anything, because I'd suddenly, once I got it done, I'd say, oh, I should really have this and that and the other in it, and I'm fond of them all pretty much. One of the things that I love about this collection I put together is that it's the just having all of them there, but also Playboy always does a very careful job of printing. They were way ahead of most magazines at the time, and continued to be. But the thing is that they're printing on magazine stock paper, although it's good stock paper, it's just magazine paper. And this thing has got this fantastic, rich, thick, white, gorgeous paper, which, so when the color stuff is printed on that, it's just, I've never seen it look better. I mean, I just, it was such a thrill. I mean, it just sort of glows. So I was kind of just sort of slowly sank into a trance going through everything.
I guess that means you feel that Gary and Kim and Eric took good care of you over at Fantagraphics.
Oh yeah, they're marvelous. Yeah, they just do beautiful work. Everything about it, from the binding up, they're just devoted to making this stuff look as good as they possibly can, and it's gorgeous the way they handle the stuff. Just gorgeous.
Well. And you certainly are in good company there in terms of the folks that they have collected works.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
My goodness.
Yeah, they sent me a bunch of stuff. I'd seen a good deal of it, but one I hadn't seen was a marvelous one by Bill Malden, who's this cartoonist that was back in World War II, and he did this series of cartoons about it, Joe and Willie, who were a couple of GIs. They made the whole thing, and it was like this one. It was one book, but a huge book, and it went into a slipcase, and it was printed in a sort of rugged canvassy cloth, which was of the same color that the sort of fatigue suits that these soldiers wore, and just all these little details about it. They really do the best job of anybody along those lines. They really do.
I actually have a copy of that on my shelf. Trying to think of the fellow's name, Pastino, I think, who wrote the biography of Malden.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
I mean, it's just they do really, really nice work.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, were you surprised that someone wanted to print all of those cartoons in one in one collection at one time? That was a pretty big undertaking.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I had no hardly any warning of it, and Hefner Court was involved in it, and there was talk of I've had scads of collections, but nothing like this. I've never seen any cartoon book, which is or books. It's a, as they say, it's three books in a box. This elaborately executed. I mean, I'm just astonished.
One of the things that struck me in looking through this. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but.
Mm-hmm.
In going through the three volumes, and in my just general recollection of your work, despite the fact that 50 years with Playboy, it's very hard to find a naked breast or butt in your cartoons.
Yeah, it's an odd thing. Stuff is there's a few cartoons which involve sex. I mean, I think there's one where Mrs. Santa. Where Santa's bedroom, and Mrs. Santa's opened the closet door, and there's these female elves hidden out in the thing. So that's tricky. And then there's a couple of I think they're probably one which I get people bring up is a young high school, I suppose, age. Couple, and they've been necking out in the back porch of this little suburban house, and he has removed her blouse, and she says, "I told you not to do that." And her, instead of breasts, she has these horrendous swollen eyes staring out from her chest. So it's sex, but it's definitely perverted, without any doubt whatsoever.
I'm just thinking as you were saying that, and that the high school age couple. I was thinking of there was a guy who used to write for National Lampoon, and who was one of the guys who wrote Animal House. His name is Chris Miller.
Right.
And if you're familiar with him, he used to write these stories about young people, and they'd get into these, a lot of times they'd get into these sexual situations, and like horrible things would happen at the end. And I thought, and it just occurred to me that if he ever had those illustrated, you would have been the perfect guy to illustrate those stories.
Yeah, I probably would. I was I was one of the National Lampoon people.
I remember that. Oh, of course. Yeah. So of course you know Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People, Fantagraphics is going to bring it next year. They're going to bring out a complete collection of this comic strip I did for them, which is called Nuts, which is. About this kid. The background on that was. It was an extraordinary magazine to work with because they were just wanted to do the most shocking and appalling stuff they could think of and frontal attack politically all the time, and so they had a little comic section to the rear, and then they asked me would I do a strip as part of this comic section, and I said sure, I'd be happy to, and they said something as horrible as you can think of. So I was mulling over, you know, somebody was zombies, somebody was Frankenstein, somebody was this, that, you know, the various cliches. And it suddenly struck me what was the most horrible thing. And I was thinking, being a little kid, the struggles you go through growing up, which you sort of repress mostly. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing was an exercise in memory. And it's just that. These kids, they just like look like these little cute little things, but inside they're really their heads are working and they're puzzled and trying to figure all this stuff out, and none of it makes any sense. And the stuff that grown-ups tell them to do or not to do doesn't seem to make any sense either, and it's all very scary and so on, and that's what it's about. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Interesting. So all that will be collected next year.
That'll be next year, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, of course, they had the great the National Lampoon Comics section. You were in there, and it was Trots and Bonnie, and...
It was a fantastic bunch of talented people there, and mm-hmm. I'm sorry that we could really use a National Lampoon today. I wish there was something like that was around. It was very unique. It dared everything. It just was astonishing. Wonderful.
Yeah. Sad we don't have them anymore. I was actually at Barnes & Noble today, and I bought from the bargain rack a copy of Spy, The Funny Years, which Spy first
succeeded. Oh, right, yeah.
Lampoon. And, I mean, it's just, there's nothing like that. It's just nothing like
it. No, there isn't. Most of the all the people that were associated with it, when it collapsed finally, they all went. Most of them went to television, and so the nighttime humor is essentially the rowdier shows are mostly graduates. It's a whole little underground gang. Wonderful bunch of people.
Now. You joined up with Playboy after it had been in press, I think, about 4 years. Do you mind retelling the story of how you and Hefner connected? Because it was kind of accidental.
Yeah, it's quite bizarre. I was selling various magazines, a whole bunch of magazines, which were leading magazines of the period, long since gone, Collier's and so on. And out came this really interesting magazine, which was called Trump, and it was a very, very classily produced, excellent paper, all kinds of expensive layout tricks, and very funny. And I realized the guy who was the editor of the thing was Harvey Kurtzman, who was the guy that created Mad Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I looked up its address on its masthead in the front of the magazine, and I was going, it was in Chicago. It was their offices. So my parents lived in Chicago, and I would visit them for Christmas every year. So So I called, it was nearby Christmas, so I called up the number, and I said who I was and what I did, and I would very much like to, I was very impressed by the magazine, and I would love to talk to somebody there and see if I could join up. And an appointment was made. And so I went to Chicago and showed up for the appointment. There was this brownstone, large brownstone. And I went to the receptionist, and a very well set up reception room and all the rest of it. And I identified myself, and she said, "Oh yes, that's fine. Please, by all means, you'll be called up in just a second or so." And I said, "I'll see Mr. Kurtzman." I said, "No." I said, "Well, anybody who will be there from Trump?" And they said, "Oh, well, Trump's printed in they're out of New York." And so I was totally flabbergasted. And this guy came up behind me and said, "I'm Art Paul." Later, I learned he was the art director of Playboy. And he said, "And Hef would like to see you." And so I didn't know who or what Hef was. I knew what Hefner was, but I didn't know the nickname. So he put me in a staircase, and I went up in this room, a narrow little staircase, and there was a smallish room lit only by one lamp, and the shades all drawn, and there was this thin man, very intelligent looking, on the phone, and he looked up at me and smiled and waved me to a chair. And he was talking on the phone, and he quotes these lines, I don't know how many times I quoted them. And he said, "Well," he said, "there was a very good article you wrote, excellent article, very well written. It's a swell article. I liked it very much. But the problem is it's anti-sin, and we're pro-sin." And I thought, what is this? And he said a few sort of kindly words to this fellow and then hung up. Stood up, reached over his desk, and we shook hands, and he said, "I've been waiting for you." And in retrospect, I can't imagine why the heck I didn't try Playboy before then, because Hefner had done a very radical thing in that he had bought people, this science fiction and fantasy authors, who prior to his purchasing them, their only markets were pulp magazines, which paid very small amounts of money. And he paid them good amounts of money. I mean, he was the first person to pay a reasonable amount of money for a fantasy story or a horror story or science fiction story. And I should have made the connection. It turned out that he'd been following my stuff, and we got started, and he's a superb editor. And he just was... helped to, he just gave, he would let me rip. I did some color stuff for Collier's magazine, but mostly it was black and white stuff. So I could do it full page, full color, and really just, you know, go nuts, do as weird stuff as I could think of. So it was just, it was an amazing stroke of luck. I was just...
How does a relationship like that, I mean, now you look back and you've been working there and with him 50 years, but I know every editor I've worked with over the years, it starts off a little rough and they've got to put their thumbprint on you and you know, make you sort of toe the line. Was that ever the case there, or were you just, whatever you turned in, I mean, you know, were you ever rejected by Hefner? Did he say, "Oh no, that's not going to work for us"?
Oh yeah, sure. The routine with magazine cartoons is you prepare a batch of cartoons, rough drawings, and give it to the editor of the magazine, and the editor makes, or editors, and they make a choice from the selection. And then in Hefner's case, very very seldom in any other magazine did they make it. They just bought the thing and you drew it and that was that. But Hefner occasionally would make a little suggestion, write it in the bottom of the rough drawing. So how about, you know, something something? All, and they were all very good suggestions. Actually, I think in the whole time I've been with him, I think there's maybe been, oh, I don't know, three or four, which I didn't quite agree with. And so what I would do is I would respond to him. And in all but maybe two cases, he said, all right, you're right. And he didn't do, you know, we didn't do that. But mostly they were just, you know, really on-target suggestions. And he's a really something to watch as an editor. I remember not in that building, but in a later building, the first of the Playboy buildings in Chicago. And he had established his apartment was on the top floor, and directly beneath it was where all the editors were. And they were, it's this big room. And on the edge, they built these offices so that they lined the walls. And around noon, he was strictly a night person. He'd appear and he'd come down the staircase from his apartment, and in a kind of trance, almost. It was just sort of very sort of dreamy, and he'd walk down, and all these editors had gotten the stuff ready to show him that they needed to show him, mm-hmm. And as he approached the first door of this the first office of the first editor there, and the guy would come up with an armful of stuff, and Hefner would turn and instantly focus. I mean, it was extraordinary to see how he would just put all his attention, very intense, on whatever it was. And he'd go through it, making comments, pointing to this and that, and so on and so on, and the editor nodding, and they'd be discussing and so on. And once that was done, he would then go back into this sort of trance state and walk on to the next office. Then the next guy would come out, and again, he would zip, he'd go into this focus and so on. And I realized at that point that the guy, he was sort of, I would imagine Napoleon was like that. they just, you know, amazing ability to pay full attention to whatever was there. And if it wasn't, if there was nothing happening, blanco, you know, just not there, but available. And he's not a you were talking about sort of, you know, the idea of sort of domineering. He doesn't domineer, although he's a very powerful fellow. I mean, you're really in the presence of quite a person, and you know it. But he's by no in no way ever have I seen him be a bully or be do anything insulting or. It just makes sense. Whatever he's intense, but it's let's make this as good as we can. Intense.
And I have to ask you over all those years. I don't know what your marital status over the years may have been, but did you ever get to enjoy the wonders of the mansion in all those years?
Oh yes,
of working
indeed,
for
yes, yes.
Ah.
And they were wonderful. no, it was an extraordinary. The Chicago mansion was. Really an amazing operation. I'd go out there every so often because I'd be doing a spread or something, or I'd just go out there. And they'd put me up there, and it was an intriguing operation in the sense that Hefner is totally a night person. He's a little less that now, but he was, at that point, he really didn't show up. He never did show up until 12 at the earliest. And he would he was there mostly from there in into the wee hours, and then he'd go to sleep. But the thing that so what he did was he set the mansion was up where so that the staff was instructed to go along with whatever the interior schedule of the guest was. So they knew his was this odd thing of the nighttime. But they had a little sort of eating place, various grades. So they had a sort of a dining room thing or a more informal kind of place. You could choose whichever you wanted, and you could set up your own schedule. And so at any time of the day or night, you could say, "I'd like breakfast," and they would give you breakfast, or you could say, "I want dinner," or whatever. It had no relationship. It was your own decision. You could just make out your own schedule. And but the other thing that was fascinating was that he had these windows which you none of the windows in this huge mansion looked out. They were all had these screens in them and were illuminated from inside. So that 24 hours a day, it was the same exact lighting. And you would lose track of the time. It was very strange. And I remember I came from that area. I grew up in Evanston, right next door to Chicago. And friends knew I was there, so they would call me. And I'd find myself in sort of Jack Lemmon movie routines where I would be talking to them, and I wouldn't have the vaguest idea if it was the morning or it was lunch or something. And I'd sort of try to figure out where it was from the person without actually saying, I don't know what time it is. But it was wonderful. Now they had these lovely parties and so on and so on.
Well, that's what I was kind of curious. How can I put this discreetly? Did you ever, get lucky at a Playboy party?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, indeed, happily, yeah. No, it was as advertised, really was. It was swell.
Do you worry that, eventually there'll come a day that Hef is not running the magazine?
Yeah. It won't be the same. I mean, it's an extension of him, and it just won't be the same if he's not around.
But in regard to just cartoons, I mean, GQ, Esquire, they don't run cartoons anymore. Playboy has run cartoons, a lot of cartoons,
Of
course, everybody knows that Hefner, he'd wanted to be a cartoonist, and so when that didn't happen, he's been a big supporter. Do you think that if he's gone, the next person is not going to maintain that love and respect and space for cartoons?
I just don't know. I just sort of leave that up to the future. But he won't. No, he's unique. He's set up this whole thing. He's also one thing. It's a case of you have to have been there to know. He's one of these guys that I think historically will be an important figure. I mean, he did it very much on purpose. He was out to open up life in America. Let's have fun. Let's do stuff, and let's get rid of a lot of these sort of bugaboos that we have. And it was a campaign. That was it was the whole thing all the way through was and is a campaign to free people, and it worked. He really himself by the influence of the magazine and by all kinds of other things. He was involved in all sorts of things, the clubs and everything else. But just on and on and on, he pulled it off. He's like he's like P.T. Barnum, or he's like there's these sort of people that at the time you just thought were entertainers, or they were interesting people, but they're changers. He changed the country, it's a different place because of him. It's an amazing story, which is starting to come out. I mean, they're starting to. There's this woman, very intelligent European, and she's done this. She's making this documentary on him, and it's all about that aspect. So that'll emerge as a thing. You'll probably somebody have a course on Hefner in college or something like that.
I studied Hefner in college without a course.
Yes, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
What in the Playboy collection, and of course that's what we're talking about here, is the 50 years Gay and Wilson, 50 years of Playboy cartoons. We see raw first drafts of several cartoons side by side with the detailed finished versions.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me was it's interesting that your basic cartoons are as funny and eye catchy as other cartoonists' finished work. Do you ever feel like you work too hard on these?
No, I am obsessive. I do work very hard on them, and my roughs are really pretty.
Finished.
Finished. I mean, they're not finished, but they're there's a lot of, I mean, there's no doubt about this should be here, this should be there, and so on. The expression and this should be this, and the positioning of the figure should be that, and the mood of the environment should be such and such. And all that's quite clear in the rough. Yes, that's not a rough. Some cartoonist roughs are extremely rough, just a sort of doodle sort of thing. But yeah, it's always been that way with me. You know.
I'm sorry, I meant to interrupt. Did you learn anything about the way you work and what you do from seeing a collection like this put together?
For seeing this thing. As I say, the colors, I was delighted with the colors because I've never seen them in reproduction be so true. Mm-hmm. So that was a great thrill to see them, all these glowing bright stuff and page after page after page of it. And I was extremely touched by nice things said by various people in these in articles in the thing, and the whole body was very awesome going through it, and stirred up all kinds of memories, and also I got a lot of laughs out of it because a whole bunch of cartoons I'd totally forgotten, and they made me laugh, which always pleases me when that happens.
Have you ever drawn friends or coworkers or any of that kind of thing into the cartoons?
Oh no, that's a good question. Nobody's ever asked that one before, and the answer is no. I've never done that. No, I've done a lot of commentary. What happened is I started out just it was grotesque or macabre or sort of weird one way or another. But then when this, there was that period which was just staggering when all these awful things happened. And the Kennedy got shot, and then Martin Luther King got shot, and so on and so on. And it was, and also the ecology business had begun to become evident. This amazing business that's going on where we've been so neglectful or thoughtless that we're actually in danger of not destroying the world. The world will go on quite happily with or without us, but destroying the kind of world which will support us as a species. That struck me vibrated with my strange sense of humor. I mean, that's about the funniest thing you can think of. Is a species setting up its own destruction, and also just this, it was appalling. All the chaos of the assassinations, and I got political, and so there's a lot of very rarely is it direct and open, but every so often it is. But there's a lot of preaching and ranting going on in some of those jokes, for sure.
Okay.
And I have this little silly fantasy that some senator will come across some cartoon. I think Hefner's favorite of the whole bunch is these Eskimos, and they're looking up there they are in the Arctic, and then polar regions, and they're looking up at the sky, and from either direction are these gigantic missiles hurtling through the air, each way, one batch going in one direction and another batch going the other direction, and the one Eskimo is saying to the other Eskimo, I guess that's the end of civilization as they know it. And that was very direct, but That got in there, that whole thing, and continued.
Now you mentioned the words gross, macabre, weird. How did you become that guy? I mean,
I don't know. It was probably it appealed to me. I remember as a kid going to these movies, which were marvelous, scary movies. And they gave me a huge push. I suppose one of the major influences was the guy that did the Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and they were just these incredible films, which are horror movies certainly, but they're also humor movies, mm-hmm. and they're really very funny, and they're extremely philosophical. I mean, it's a great depth to them. And I saw like, I mean, as a kid, sort of awed at the whole thing. The other ones were just scary movies, but these were they were quite different. They had they were saying something, and it registered on me. And I liked the comic books and the you know, all that sort of stuff. And I always loved Halloween deeply. Although I'm sorry, what's happened to it is that it used to be a very odd holiday in that the kids ran it, and they would we'd go out, we'd get these costumes and we'd go out and form bands on our own, and we'd go around and trick or treat, and then we'd come back and the parents would say, how did it go? And I remember saying, oh, it's swell, really swell, and that's all I'd say. And that's all the other kids would say. It was just, it was us. It was our holiday. But then they brought in, there were rumors of crazy old ladies who would give children candy with needles in them and stuff like that. Mm. And that changed it all. And now it's still very sweet. The kids come around and they've got, and they look as lovable as they possibly could. But they've always got at least two or three adult guardians, so it's no longer in their hands. It's like Christmas. It's run by grown-ups. But I guess that was part of it.
I was thinking, speaking of Halloween, I was thinking that like guys like Charles Adams and Gus
Charlie, he was, of course, a huge influence. Absolutely. Yeah, no two ways about it.
Well, what I was thinking, though, was that I suspect that people meeting you for the first time must expect a creepy, frightening guy, and that actually on the back cover of each of these three volumes, you try to live up to that. There's some very frightening photos of you, but you're actually a very normal-looking guy.
Yeah, the photos were my idea. Actually, they had some thought of portraits of me or something, and I said, no, why don't you have the photographer show up with a sheet of plastic, transparent plastic, and I'll be pressing against it like I'm trying to get out of the book. and they said, yeah, and they did.
Yeah.
And, that was fun. So,
they're great pictures.
Yeah, they work. Yeah, they're cute.
Well, we've already run over time, so I just have one other question for you.
Sure.
You will be 80 in February, and happy birthday to you.
Right, that scares the heck out of me.
Something scares you? Oh no, I don't believe that.
Oh yeah,
But I wonder. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you have a you know, it's a nice, very faddish these days to ask someone if they have a bucket list. But I mean, is there still stuff that you want to do that you haven't done? You have the National Lampoon collection next year, but I mean, is there other things that you're still looking forward to doing in terms of your work or anything else?
Oh sure, yeah. I think that's the secret of artists. A lot of them seem to be amazingly durable, even if they get old and even if they get all crippled. I remember there was this wonderful documentary of Matisse, the painter, and he comes out in his garden in France, and he's so arthritic that he's got this little thing as something that can make it leave a mark. It's strapped, literally strapped into his hand, and on his other arm, and there's this thing which is sort of belts onto it to the other arm and holds a drawing pad, and he's walking around the gardens drawing plants, and he comes up to this one garden, and there's a flower in the middle of this bush, and he looks at it with amazing intensity, and he draws it lovingly, and the flower's there, and I was looking at this thing, and I swear I thought, that flower knows he's doing this. And it was just love of it was amazing, and the aliveness of this guy. And I don't know how old he was at that point. He certainly was well over. He was well into his 80s, and he wasn't into his 90s, and all crippled up, and he's still chugging along. So I hope I'm lucky enough to be able to do that.
Well, folks, listen, if you love the frighteningly funny cartoons of Gahan Wilson, pick up the 3-volume set, Gahan Wilson, 50 Years of Playboy Cartoons. It's now available from Fantagraphics, fantagraphics.com. The book is also available on Amazon.com or at MrMedia.com. And to learn more about Gahan.
Sold out his whole first thing, and the huge outfit,
Amazon.
Yeah.
Sold out already.
Yeah, sold out the whole darn thing. They have to reload it, yeah.
So what are we bothered promoting it for the last 40 minutes?
By all means.
Folks, forget about it. Go.
Buy it, ladies and gentlemen.
There are
rumors that it brings you luck.
Oh, gosh. Oh, no. Yes, and if you want to ward off winding up in one of Mr. Wilson's cartoons, you should buy a set.
Excellent.
That will bring you,
right.
There you go. And you can also, to learn more about the cartoonist, you can visit his website, www.gahanwilson.com, GAHANWILSON. You know what? Have I been butchering your first name this whole
actually,
hour?
It's Gahan, yeah. It's
Gahan.
Yeah, it's an Irish family name. So I'm, which is Rocky Field in the Gaelic. Gahan.
Well, it's a tough one because you don't want to lean too hard on the gay, and you don't want to not, you know. So I don't know.
So just Gahan, like it had a Y Gahan in there, or Ich Gahan in German.
Well, listen, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you. I've enjoyed your work for so long.
Thank you.
And continued good luck. And when the National Lampoon book comes out, come back and let's talk again because we'll.
I'd love to do it.
I'd love to talk about those days too. So.
Okay.
Thank you and happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Yeah, happy New Year to you.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
And folks, for more comics-related interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Monty Wolverton, talking about his dad, Basil, Gene Colan, Trina Robbins, Joe Staton, Stefan Pastis, Mark Tisulli, Mort Walker, and many, many more. Lots of comics-related interviews over on the site, folks. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. And please keep telling your friends about the show. We really appreciate that. Twitter it, retweet it, mention it on Facebook. That's all great. Thank you for doing that. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Talk to you again soon, everybody. Thanks for listening.